night and sleep in the spare room. Don't worry, he told me when I called him earlier. I won't go anywhere until you're home. This isn't what I'm worrying about, but I don't say as much. Home feels so far away from this airless whitewash room with its three chairs and desk and the tape recorder balanced on one end of it. And I wonder how long I will be here. How long can they keep me before they decide what comes next? Ever since the fate I've dreaded leaving my children, I do anything to be tucking them into their beds right now so I can breathe in their familiar smells, read them that one more story they always beg for. They're not holding you there, are they? Tom had asked me on the phone. No, they just want to ask me a few questions. I brushed off the fact I was in a police station as if it were nothing. I didn't tell Tom that the detective had asked if I wanted someone to be with me, that I'd refused and had assured her as breezily as I could that I didn't need anyone, as I'd happily tell her what I knew. My fingers begin to tingle, and I pull them away from the glass and hold them under the table, squeezing them tightly, willing the blood to rush back in. So, Charlotte, the detective starts in a slow drawl. She's asked me if she can use my first name, but hasn't offered me the privilege in return. I know her name's Susan, because she said as much into the tape, but I expect she knows I won't call her that. Not when she introduced herself as Detective Inspector Rawlings. It's a small point, but it reinforces who is in control. My breath sticks tightly in my throat as I wait for her to ask me what I was doing there tonight. In many ways, the truth would be the easy option. I wonder if I tell her she'd let me leave now so I can go home to my children. The detective is interrupted by a knock on the door, and she looks up as a police officer pokes her head into the room. DCI Hayes is on his way from Dorset, the officer says. ETA 3 hours. Rawlings nods her thanks, and the door closes again. Hayes is the senior investigating officer in what has become the Alice Hodder case. He has become a constant fixture in my life over the last 2 weeks, and I wonder if this means I will be kept here until he arrives, because I assume he'll want to speak to me. The thought that I could be cooped inside this room for another 3 hours makes the walls close in deeper. I don't remember ever feeling claustrophobic, but right now the sense of being trapped makes me feel lightheaded, and my eyes flicker as they try to adjust again. Are you okay? D.I. Rawlings asks. Her words sound rough. They give the impression it would annoy her if I weren't. She has dyed blonde hair scraped back into a tight bun, which shows the black of her roots. She looks young, no more than 30, and has plastered too much bright red lipstick onto her very full lips. I hold a hand against my mouth and hope the feeling of nausea will pass. I nod and reach for the glass of water to take a sip. Yes, I say, thank you, I'll be okay, I just feel a little sick. D.I. Rawlings purses her red lips and sits back in her chair. She's in no rush. She may want to appear that the evening's events have disturbed her plans, but her pregnant pauses betray she has nothing better to do. So, she starts again, and asks her first question, but it isn't the one I'm expecting. Let's begin by you telling me what happened 13 days ago, she says instead. The day of the fate. Charlotte's story. Before. Charlotte. At dead on 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, the doorbell rang, and I knew it would be Harriet because she was never a minute late. I emerged from the bathroom still in my pyjamas as the bell rang a second time. Flicking back the curtains to be sure it was them, I saw Harriet hovering on the doorstep, her arm tightly gripped around her daughter's shoulder. Her head hung low as she spoke to Alice. The little girl beside her nodded as she turned and nestled her head into her mother's waist. My own children's screams erupted from downstairs. The two girls' voices battled to be heard over one another. Evie was now drowning out Molly with a constant, piercing whine, and as I ran down the stairs, I could just make out Molly.